Paul Hawken is an activist and the author of Blessed Unrest, How the Largest Social Movement in History is Restoring Grace, Justice, and Beauty to the World, which was released in paperback in March. WMNF spoke with Hawken yesterday. We began the second half of our interview by asking him to describe what he meant when he wrote that the current economic and social system favors goods over people.
One of the examples I used is that we have this extraordinary capacity now in industry to produce qualities that are Six Sigma, that is to say, that have one defect per million products, amazing quality control. And we have schools where the urinals don't work and the blackboards don't have chalk and the textbooks are 15 years old and there's metal detectors at the doorways for children to come in to make sure there's no guns and knives. And so we put an amazing amount of effort and energy into our material goods, and we have not done the same thing to each other and to our children and to the next generation. We have really abandoned them in many cases, and the fruits of that are showing and will continue to show in the future until we change our priorities.
We're speaking with Paul Hawken, the author of Blessed Unrest. And Paul, why do you think the movement is not more interconnected or visible?
It's getting connected because of modern communication technologies. The cell phone is probably the dominant technology in the world today, not computers. It certainly is the dominant organizing technology in the rest of the world. And so you are seeing a starting to knit together, but it could do it much more vigorously than it is right now. The reason it's not seen is a mystery to me. I think it's not seen because we in the media tend to look for, you know, the Martin Luther King, the Mohandas K. Gandhi, the, you know, we look for that person, the go-to person and the organization, and we're riveted by, you know, the Democratic primary conflict or, you know, between the Obama campaign and the Clinton campaign, and there's a report on the insider this and gossip and who was fired and who's running a good campaign and who isn't. Those are the kind of stories that really capture our imagination, where you have a million organizations in the world that are working cooperatively, that are collaborative, that try to work with people in place and listen to all the voices, that are not about drama, not about conflict, but about actually as I said, bringing about a more harmonious relationship between people themselves and between people and the environment. This doesn't make the headlines. And the fact that they're almost all small in itself makes it look like they're powerless. That is to say that they don't really have any real power, because we associate power with centralization, with money, and with military might, or the ability to exercise that might. And so we don't really honor the fact that real change comes from the bottom and from the outside and moves towards the center and not from the center out.
You mentioned that indigenous cultures can act as a bridge between the social and the environmental justice parts of this movement. How do they do that?
Well, just in their understanding, certainly the Native American culture in the United States and Canada certainly exemplifies that in many ways by its, like I say, it's integrative understanding of people in place. When they talk about all my relations, what they're talking about is everything, you know, the trees, the elk, their family, their ancestors, the future, the snakes, the birds, the grasses. So they see life as all connected, which it is, and therefore the ethos that arises from that is one where you don't see nature as outside of yourself. In other words, you are nature, and nature is you. And from that arises a great respect and reverence for living things. And it doesn't mean that, you know, Native Americans didn't have wars and battles and fights, and I'm not trying to put them on a pedestal. I'm just saying is that a very different ethic arose as to our relationships to the land and each other. And I think that for a lot of us in the West who were brought up in a Newtonian and Cartesian mindset, that level of understanding, which is holistic, is very helpful in this time where we see rapid deterioration of the environment, where we see widespread political corruption and economic, I would call economic disease. And it's disheartening. It's hard to encompass. It's hard to know what to do when you see so much need and so many problems around us. And I think that sort of steady understanding that transcends just this era or just this decade, but goes way back in time and foresees a time far into the future in which mankind in some way or another will still be here, is very helpful to the movement.